allergies, and they've been terrified.
It's pretty informal.
Hopefully I won't sniffle through the whole thing.
So I guess just to get started, if you could just tell us a little bit about when and where you were born, where you grew up.
Sure. I was born in Great Falls, Montana.
Okay.
I grew up in Southern California and Michigan, and I came to Wisconsin about 25 years ago.
Okay. And what was it like growing up there?
Well, my dad was a Baptist preacher, so first he was in the military, and then he was a Baptist preacher, an independent fundamental Baptist preacher. So we moved around a bit because of the military and then his church. He always started different churches and things like that, but it was a very conservative, radical right wing of the Baptist church, if you can imagine it any more right. It was very right wing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so growing up was, you know, I didn't wear pants. I didn't, you know, I wasn't allowed to play cards. I certainly wasn't allowed to talk about things like sexual orientation and things like that. So it was a little tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what year did you move to Wisconsin?
Yeah, I moved to Wisconsin in 1986.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so how did you find the community here as opposed to
California? It was non-diverse is how I found it. I was not out at the time as a lesbian. I identify as a lesbian or queer.
Mm-hmm.
I typically say queer, but most people don't understand what that means, so then I say lesbian's easier to say or for people to register.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't out yet as anything but straight married with kids. And but I did come from a very diverse area in Michigan. We had lived in the Detroit area.
Okay.
And so I noticed immediately the lack of ethnic and racial culture here.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the 80s, it was only about 1.75% minorities here in the Fox Cities. Today it's about 15%, and that's expected to double in the next 15 or 20 years.
Yeah.
So I noticed that right away. There wasn't a vibrant gay or lesbian or queer community happening in the 80s here either. There was a bar. There was a Pivot Bar, and that was about, you know, that was about the extent of what I knew of the LGBT community.
Yeah. What were the attitudes like in that time, as far as you could tell, of this community?
I lived in Neenah, Wisconsin, in Menasha area. So it was very close-minded. It was, it almost felt rural to me, but it wasn't rural, but it felt rural. I could see that Appleton was progressing a little quicker than most communities, but it was still not where it is today. I think we've just made leaps and bounds, but it was, I wouldn't say, it wasn't backwards. I wouldn't call it backwards, but it was pretty close-minded. It was a Madison in the 80s, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. So when you did come out, what was that like in this area?
Well, I didn't come out until I was in my 30s, so I'm later in life I came out. And it was actually, for me, it wasn't difficult because I'd always been involved in diversity work in the LGBT movement and supportive and all of those things. And so when I came out, it was almost expected because everybody knew before I knew. It was one of those things.
Yeah.
So when I came out, I didn't find it not supportive. I found that there were a lack of things to do. There wasn't a lot of social, you know, events, and the social events that were there, they felt a little bit sometimes like the dating game, and that just that wasn't real fun. So I guess I found people supportive because I knew, you know, members of the LGBT community, so I was immediately immersed in, you know, you know, kind of brought into the fold.
Yeah. What do you think it would have been like had you not known those people and you were trying to find a community? What do you think it was like?
Oh, it would have been much... I talk to people all the time that don't know the people. You know, it would have been a lot harder, I think, had I not had such a strong friend base already. And my friends were pretty liberal anyway. So, you know, even if they weren't gay or lesbian or queer, they identified as liberal. And so that kind of helped a little bit.
Yeah,
I would say that, yeah.
Yeah. What can you, I know you said you didn't really participate too much in the, like, prominent social scene here, but what was that like as far as, like, the Pivot Club and these other spaces?
Yeah, I went to the Pivot Club once, and it scared me to death because I was in the closet. And there was another place, I think it was on 41, and I don't remember the name of it, but it was a gay bar in Neenah on 41, and I went in there too. I was always going into these places very pretending I was straight, and but yet there was this secret desire to be a part of that scene. So for me, it was terrifying because, one, I wanted somebody to hit on me.
Yeah.
And two, I didn't want somebody to hit on me because I was petrified that they would.
Uh-huh.
So it was this, like, very odd experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was really the early 90s. And then later on in the 90s, when I was starting to hang out with LGBT people, openly identified, the social scene was more of book clubs and people's homes and, you know, things like that. We didn't have Ravens. And I can't even remember when Rascals went into. I don't even know the year that Rascals went up. But I might be wrong, but I don't think we had Rascals in the early 90s. Yeah. So it was more, the scene was more, especially for women, it was potlucky.
Yeah.
You know, you meet people, you go to potluck, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm also a member of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, so that has always been an affirming place to be. And then sometimes involved with things at Lawrence University helped you get connected with more of the community.
Yeah. So how do you think it, you said like with the women it was more like potlucks.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think the social scene was different for gay men than it was for lesbian women?
Well, actually, there was a gay there were some similarities, but it was mainly not the young 19-20-year-old gay men.
Mm-hmm.
I think their social scene here was almost non-existent. They would be probably traveling to Madison and Milwaukee to have a social scene. But there was a group that formed, and it was called the Lavender Salon. And you've heard of it?
With
Michael
Nitz. We interviewed him yesterday.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And so he'll tell you when that might have formed in 1990-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had that formed, and it was this gay men's book club. In fact, I was a member of it, even though it was a gay men's book club.
Uh-huh.
But that reminded me similar of those potlucks, because
right.
it was a potluck, and it was
right.
a book club. And so I think men of a certain age, or older than a certain age, I'll say older than 30, found themselves doing those types of things, because they weren't traveling to... not as often to Milwaukee and Madison for, you know, a gay scene. But I think younger people probably to some extent they still do, but not, not as much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how were you received into that space of the gay men's book club?
Well, kind of like, I was very well received because I was an activist already.
Uh-huh.
So I had this really great relationship with Michael and other people that were connected, and I just really wanted to help. And so when I came out, that really helped them kind of put their arms around me as well. I was always seen as an ally.
Uh-huh.
In fact, when I came out, one woman said, oh, there goes our strongest straight ally. Because she was just like, you know, you were just like the straight ally that we needed to push something through. It was always, you always tried to get the straight person to push it through because that's just how it was. But, you know, I'd been living a lie for so many and really just tortured by it. So it, you know, it took me, I just had to be who I was, and she was really happy for me, but that was a joke. She just said, oh, that's our strongest ally.
Mm-hmm.
I found myself embraced.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which might be different than other people's experiences, because I came out so much later. So coming out, you know, after 2000, it was a very different scene.
How was it different, you think?
Well, I can tell you, I don't know how old you are, but you're probably my daughter's age and when ages, and they're in their 20s. When I look at people your age, it is a part of your existence, from the internet, from what you see on TV, from movies, from discussions, and it's always in the political field, where it wasn't like that around that time. I mean, if we were talking about LGBT issues in a political scene, we weren't seen as a positive force to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
Whereas we are now. Now we're seeing as people that they want to get our vote and they want to, you know, include us at the table. Some do, not all.
Yeah.
But, in those days, it wasn't like that. And it was, you know, it was seen as more of an abnormality. It wasn't that long after the DSM had taken us out of, you know, it wasn't labeled a mental illness. But it was still, churches were just starting to have, or communities were just starting to have discussions about, what does it mean to be LGBT? But it wasn't something like we could do a library program on it now, and it isn't that controversial.
Right.
Yeah.
And so how did that change your activism? You know, you saying the woman was like, oh, there goes our straight ally.
Yeah.
How did that change the dynamics of your work?
My activism changed because it became a lot more personal for me. I had given up a lot of privilege when I came out. I ended a marriage. And it, you know, I knew that I thought I knew what it was like in the struggle, but you don't until you walk a mile in somebody's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you partner with somebody of the same sex, and you identify, you know, as queer or
mm-hmm.
lesbian, all of a sudden you're stripped of all these rights that were just automatic when you were married to
yeah.
someone of the opposite sex,
mm-hmm.
and you identified as a straight woman with kids and all of these things. So how it changed my mind in the struggle was it became much more deeply personal.
Mm-hmm.
And when it became much more personal, I fought even harder for it.
Mm.
Even though it didn't feel right before,
yeah.
you know, I fought hard. And my daughter came out about the same time I did. My 15,
mm-hmm.
She was 15 when she came out. And so it became personal then as well, thinking that she's not going to have an opportunity to marry the person she loves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had already been married, but not in the right, you know,
yeah.
not in the right marriage.
Right.
So it didn't, it felt like, wait, now I've got it right and I can't get married.
Yeah.
And I can't even touch my partner in public because, you know, sometimes there's places that that's not,
yeah.
it's just not acceptable and we have to worry about our safety. And so it just, it became ever more present for me to
yeah.
fight for my rights in my workplace and fight for the rights, you know, in our community
yeah.
and be out and open. That was the main thing, is I felt a responsibility to younger people to say, this is, you know, this is who I am. And, oh, by the way, I also happen to be a lesbian.
Yeah.
You know, just not so that if I'm talking in schools or something, the one kid in there who feels alienated
yeah.
will go, okay, she turned out okay. She's
yeah.
not, you know what I mean? She's,
yeah.
she had a lot of struggle along the way, but you know, it became okay.
Yeah. So how have you been received by the community? Like you say, you know, being in public and
yeah.
with your partner, how is that?
Well, there's two ways I'm perceived in public, with my partner in my personal life and as a public official
mm-hmm.
Working for the city of Appleton. With my partner, generally, we're perceived really, really well. My partner, we joke, she's somebody that we call her a 100-footer. You can spot her from 100 feet away. So we joke that, like, I, you know, although she doesn't think I pass, that I pass. Like, I can walk in a room, give a presentation, and straight people, not gay people, but straight people don't often go,
Yeah.
You know, they just,
okay.
they don't even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But if Anne's with me,
mm-hmm.
immediately, whoever Anne is with, they think, oh, this person must be
yeah.
gay. So we joke about that. So I feel like I'm more out when I'm with her than
mm-hmm.
when I'm not,
mm-hmm.
As far as how I'm perceived. You know, in this community, we haven't run into any issues with us, but we traveled to Stevens Point once, and
mm-hmm.
we were going into a coffee shop, and this red, and it's always a red pickup truck. Don't ask me why. The story always has to be a red pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry to people who own a red pickup truck, but
yeah.
these guys come by and they're in a red pickup truck and they yell "Dykes" at us in the parking lot. And anybody who hasn't had that experience would think, "Oh, that's just a word. Why would you be offended?" You know, or not offended, but just brush it off. And we thought that too. But in the moment, we thought, we're in a town, we don't know anybody.
Yeah.
There's a red truck on the road. And we were at Starbucks, so luckily they would have had to come around. We would have had time to get
yeah.
in our car. But it really had us thinking about, what's the license plate? Our safety? Because are those people going to follow us?
Yeah.
You know, you just never know. There's just spooky stories like that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was another example of where you don't have privilege. And as
mm-hmm.
as women, too, we have, you know, an extra layer stripped from us already.
Mm-hmm.
We're already aware of that sexual violence can happen to us on a daily
mm-hmm.
basis, and we're kind of live with that. We don't have male privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even think gay men have the male privilege of not being assaulted. I mean, they're one step, their privilege has been removed,
mm-hmm.
in not all their male privilege, but
mm-hmm.
some of their male privilege has been removed. So for us as a couple, we've been perceived pretty well.
Yeah.
As a public official, that's been a little bit different. We've had some interesting opportunities to educate people about what it means, because this diversity coordinator happens
yeah.
to identify as a lesbian. And
mm-hmm.
I can tell you, in public office, I don't even say queer, because they wouldn't even get it.
Right, right.
So
right.
I say, you know, lesbian. But, you know, I've had quite a bit of backlash.
Hmm.
Certain council members, you know, community members, and have come out and really been upset about the fact that I am who I am,
mm-hmm.
and that the city hired somebody, you know, with like me, especially because of my activism past
yeah.
with Fair Wisconsin and my activist present, you know. So that's been a bit of a roller coaster.
Yeah, how do you deal with that professionally?
You know, this last year it got really bad. We passed, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. We
mm-hmm.
passed domestic partner benefits for the city of Appleton.
Mm-hmm.
It's something many of us employees have been asking for a long time. It just happened to be that when I came on board, I asked for them a little more strongly, because
mm-hmm.
I'm the diversity coordinator, and that's part of my job to look at our policies. But also, my feeling was, I'm the head of diversity for the city of Appleton, and I don't even have equal benefits to my coworkers. This doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
I'd had an aneurysm surgery, and
mm-hmm.
I came back after that. My partner was with me the whole time. I've had such multiple health scares, cancer, MS. I've got
mm-hmm.
just the range of it. My partner was with me the whole time through this. It was 8.5 hours of surgery.
Mm-hmm.
She needed to take the week off. And at some point, I just said, oh, thank God, Goodwill, and it's Goodwill Industries, is so that they get this. They just
uh-huh.
get it. They don't ask questions. It is
yeah.
to them a spouse, a partner. And Anne asked me at the time, she said, now what would happen if this, you know, this was turned around
mm-hmm.
and that she was on the, I was sick or something. And we had the opportunity to figure that out because my dad died as well. And she was allowed off again. And she said, again, what happens if my dad dies?
Yeah.
And the answer at that time from the city was, you don't have those benefits because it's not equal. So I requested it strongly, and I have to say the courage of our officials to go forward with it was huge because
mm-hmm.
it was the mayor's election,
mm-hmm.
re-election year. Our HR director took the brave step to take it to HR committee, and then some of our council members had to fight for it. And we had our first openly gay council member elected to office fighting for this as well, and you know, we made it happen. But the amount of backlash we got was so huge, and there was a group that was formed under the name of Appleton Family Values.
Mm-hmm.
It changed to Appleton Taxpayers United to try to make it seem more about money, even though when they showed up at council they were all with their Bibles and, you know, saying things like that. And it's now called Fox Valley Conservative Action Network. So it's a very active group. They came out in force to our meetings.
Mm-hmm.
They sent emails threatening that that these people weren't going to get reelected. You know, they showed up and said the most heinous things that could be said in a city council chambers, using scripture
mm-hmm.
As their basis, which has no, in my opinion, has no place in government. And it was a battle and a half. And I had open records requests starting then from this organization, which. I believe in transparency in government, and that
mm-hmm.
is not an issue at all. But the open records requests that they sent were very difficult because they wanted, like, everybody I'd ever sent certain emails to on this blind copy distribution. Part of those blind copy distributions were part of, I did a lot of suicide prevention work with gay and lesbian
mm-hmm.
teens.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some teenagers' names on those, you know,
oh,
in those
yeah.
emails. There were identities that I could not release. I had
yeah.
people who work with sex offenders or drug offenders in the community. They don't want their personal emails
mm-hmm.
released. So I had to go through. It took me about 42 hours just for one request to go through and redact, which is kind of blackout names and blackout information. It felt like McCarthyism all
yeah.
over again. So I was on this list from them, and they just kept sending open records lists. They wanted, one wanted all my presentations in the schools because I apparently had this gay agenda in the schools, and it sucked up all of my time. It felt like I couldn't do my job, which is what they wanted.
Right.
I couldn't
oh, yeah.
do my job, and it was 3 months of focused on this. And
right.
it got to the point where I just couldn't, it felt like I was gonna explode. I thought, I can't take this pressure. And then I got interviewed by the Post Crescent, and it was a great interview, but front page of the Post Crescent on a Saturday or on a Sunday, she's openly gay. It's like, not that I was in the closet in any stretch
yeah.
of the imagination,
yeah.
but it felt like, oh my God, who has to come out on the front page of their local
Gee.
Paper
yeah.
and just to talk about these issues. So it became, my partner and I, it was a struggle. Luckily, I had a lot of supportive friends. People showed up at council meetings. They fought for the issue, but it became personal, and that's what was hard. We kept getting away from the topic of the benefit or the
yeah,
topic
yeah,
of,
yeah.
And then my position was on the line again. They tried to vote my position out of office, and it was the craziest thing I've ever lived through. And we just know that every budget year, it'll probably come up again that they'll try to remove the diversity coordinator. And it never happened before.
Yeah.
Because now they have an open lesbian in office. And I'm saying they as in some people, a few
yeah.
people.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of the people at the city of Appleton, the mayor, our HR director, the community development
mm-hmm.
director, all of them are very supportive. But it has been probably... Oh, I probably, in the last year, if you ask who's been the gay target in Appleton, it's been me, because it's just
mm-hmm.
just because of the nature of the work we do. And the funny thing is, domestic partner benefits, I didn't write the, I had nothing to do with the policy. Once it got there, that was HR, that was our mayor, that was our council. I had nothing to do with it. And yet I was getting all the blame, and it was just like, listen, if I would have written it, I would have written it and included straight people as domestic partners.
Yeah,
I would have
yeah.
written it differently, but I didn't. So it just felt, it just felt cruel that it was coming so personally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what response, other than that negative response, did you get any support from from just the citizens of Appleton?
I did, and I got some from our major corporations in the area who know what it, the bottom line of this is that our businesses and our corporations know that celebrating and embracing diversity and inclusion adds to their businesses,
mm-hmm.
and they're recruiting people to come to this area and live. And some of the people that they're recruiting are happen to be gay or lesbian or black
mm-hmm.
or Latino or whatever,
mm-hmm.
whatever the identity is. And they want to make sure that this community is a safe and welcoming
mm-hmm.
environment. And so they came forward in huge support. Lots of community members showed up. I mean, we packed the room. There were it was just packed with people who came in support. I would say it was pretty 50-50, gay community and straight community
mm-hmm.
Showed up for support. I even got a letter, and this was something that was very touching when this all went down. I got a letter from a minister at a local church, I'll just say evangelical church,
mm-hmm.
who, this is a church that had one of those Exodus ministries.
Mm.
They don't any longer, but they did. And so there's been, obviously we have philosophical differences on LGBT issues, but
mm-hmm.
they're a church I work with on homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this email, and it said something about, something about the article, and I thought, oh no,
mm.
oh, now this pastor is going to not want to work with me. And he emailed me the sweetest email about
mm.
how it felt like a witch hunt, and I just want you to know that I think you're doing a great job, and that he said something that I just started crying at work.
Mm.
When I see you, I see the image of God in the work that you do. And I was just so blown away that this guy who probably doesn't, I don't know if he does or if he doesn't, but he probably thinks that this is a sin and his, whatever. But he put that aside and said, listen, this isn't about that. This is about the work that you do. And it was very affirming. And I wish that I could go back and tell myself at that point to listen more to those voices than
mm-hmm.
the negative voices. But they always scream so much louder.
Yeah.
They're always so much more. There were a couple times that we had people speaking that you could hear the audience go because they would just get up and say the most insane things that just didn't even make sense. It's kind of like the God hates fags people.
Yeah,
they would use words like that, or they would talk about anal cancer just to grab our council's attention, like what so that they could say the word anal. And it was the most ridiculous. It was like a circus at that point.
Huh.
Yeah.
And has that resolved it at all now? Are they still trying to?
They have left us alone a bit on this issue. I'm sure they'll be coming after us during the budget again.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what they're going to have to chomp on is the fact that the price tag that they had put in the budget, which was $100,000 for gay and lesbian employees to have their partners on the plan, nobody signed up. And the reason nobody signed up is not because we don't have gay and lesbian employees, but because of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act.
Yeah.
We get a federal tax on our, if I had my partner sign up, we would get whatever the company puts in for that. It's like $5,000 or something for your health insurance. You get taxed on that like it's an income. And so most gay and lesbian couples, if the other person has insurance, they take it because it's less expensive that way. So it cost the city $0 this past year. So they're not going to be able to come forward with any kind of financial argument.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, knock on wood, that my partner hasn't been sick, her dad hasn't been, has not passed away. So we haven't even had to use, sick or bereavement leave.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an option for us now as well. So they've been quiet. I've also been quieter because we haven't been doing as much LGBT. I think not that I haven't been doing LGBT work, but it hasn't been as flashy as domestic partner benefits and those things. It's working with teen suicide issues and, working on the many different LGBT issues that we work on, and helping change policies to make them more gender inclusive
mm-hmm.
and not so gender specific.
Mm-hmm.
And so those aren't the flashy things that end up in the newspaper, thankfully.
Right.
So it feels like some of the other battles in the city have been away from me, but I will always, be the position under attack and it just is what it is.
Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about the work that you do with the LGBTQ community?
Sure. Well, and I'll talk about, I'll start with a little bit, one of the history moments that I don't know if you've talked to anybody who was involved in this, but in 2000, in the 90s, I was involved with Kimberly-Clark Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't help start this, but I want to make sure that they get mentioned. Kimberly-Clark, probably in 1994 or 5, started their Pride Network. It wasn't called Pride Network at the time. I think it was LGBT Network. And Marty Brown was a gentleman who started that. And so there was this network for gay and lesbian employees. And I would often go to those events. Mm-hmm. That was kind of because I was also feeling out things a little bit. But that is still a very strong network, and Marty Brown not only helped start that network, he helped Kimberly Clark be one of the first employers in the area to pass domestic partner benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a cool part of history. But in my personal life as a mom, I had gotten involved with Nina High School, and there was how I first got involved was there was a Confederate flag issue going on. They were allowing their students to wear Confederate flags, fly Confederate flags, chase after African American students. All of these terrible things. And so I started this group called STAND, which was students and teachers advocating for Nina's diversity, and we took on some of those issues. About 2002, we had a student group who wanted to form a GSA, and we all thought that was a great idea. It was a separate need than what STAND could give, because STAND was really about inclusive, about all issues of diversity.
Yeah.
GSAs cover gay straight alliance issues. And the school turned them down. The school said that they couldn't have this GSA, and it was the first one in the area. It was the first one in the area. In fact, I will have to look, but it might have been, we'll have to look that up, but it was the first one in the area for sure, but I know there weren't many, if there were any, in the state at the time. So you might want to look that up. I wish I knew that history. But anyway, 2002, I can't imagine Madison wouldn't have beaten us to it, but anyway, they asked for this, and they were denied. And so they said, nope, but you've got a group that's too similar, STAND, you can just have that group. Well, then some students and I as a parent and people brought in the ACLU. And when the ACLU came in 2003 and threatened a lawsuit, the school buckled and they allowed a GSA. And no other school in the area had that. So that was a pretty defining moment in early LGBT activism. Not early, because it wasn't my earliest, but it was a big pivotal moment. And so being involved with that was, you know, speaking at school boards and, you know, just really kind of feeling the temperature of people out there was really important. You know, after that, I've been involved as a board member of Positive Voice, which is an organization, you know, here in Northeast Wisconsin as well. And actually around that time as well, actually in 2000, I became the first program director for Harmony Cafe.
Okay.
And I had served on the GLBT Partnerships Advisory Board in a year before that. But Shannon Kenevan asked me if I would, you know, if I wanted the gig, and I said sure, and I left Kimberly Clark actually for this part-time work. I ended up going into full-time work with a domestic violence agency afterward that, but at that time, we really were focusing on making sure that there was one place in Appleton that would be known as the welcoming and inclusive place for everybody who was different. We often got called the gay cafe because this is where gay kids felt comfortable, queer kids, and you know, and that was, you know, that was fine by us because it was just another place for somebody to feel welcome and comfortable. Some of the work that I did then in the domestic violence after, in 2004, I started working with domestic violence. Was some of the early work in our state with our leaders, not by any means by myself, but leaders like Molly Herman and Tess Moyer and all these individuals with the Wisconsin Coalition Against Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, working on LGBT issues of intimate partner violence. So domestic violence, sexual assault, hate crimes, those are some of the issues that I got involved in the early 2000s. And I continue to do that work today, trying to work with that. In fact, we have an organization that we're looking to start here in the Fox Valley. It's called the Fox Valley and Oshkosh Anti-Violence Project, which is similar to New York's Anti-Violence Project in that we would focus on hate crimes and domestic violence, sexual assault, and suicide issues and things like that. So that had been the crux of most of my LGBT involvement because I had been so busy in my other work that I really kind of married it with that as well. And that was difficult work because I was working with a community, you know, who doesn't want to acknowledge that those issues exist. And so that's difficult. But Then I started in 2009, or was it 2010? I can't even remember the year. 2009, I accepted the position for the city's diversity coordinator. And I remember joking in the beginning, not even joking, it's a joke to me now, but I remember saying when somebody said, well, how is it to work for the city of Appleton? And I said, you know, I really like it. I don't have to get involved in any of that political stuff. I just get to help people.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that became untrue because probably within the year, September 2010, Cody Barker died by suicide in Shiocton, Wisconsin. Mm. Cody's mom, Darla, is very active in the community. But when Cody Barker died, it hit me really hard because Cody had been in an audience where I had spoke just months before, and I was talking about being your fabulous self and, you know, safe spaces and all of those things, but I didn't connect with Cody that night, and I always wondered, why didn't I connect with him? And so at that point, it kind of drove me forward to say, I need to connect with as many youth and get involved in this work as much as possible. So I met with our mayor, Tim Hanna, and I said, hey, this is happening. And at the same time, when Cody died, when we did a count of the suicides that had happened in probably the 16-month period before that, we realized that 3 of the 4 teens that died by suicide had identified as gay or lesbian, which that is a huge percentage.
Yeah.
And so I went to meet with Mayor Hanna, and I said, hey, listen, there's something going on. I mean, it's typical that it happens larger in the LGBT community, but we don't have a huge LGBT community here compared to a Madison or a San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And even with those statistics, it isn't this much. I mean, this is just really, really high. And I said, you know, as somebody who's out and somebody who thinks that we need to be a part of this as the city, we need to start talking about what can we do to figure out what's going on in prevention work and all of that. So he said, yes, he fully supportive. Yes, we need to do that. And so we formed, with Harmony Cafe, we formed the LGBT suicide prevention team. And we got together teachers and people. And the first meeting, we thought we'd have maybe 20 people at a round table. 78 people showed up.
Wow.
Because they were concerned that this was becoming an issue. And I mean, it just was scaring all of us. It was kind of like, I remember the early days of the AIDS epidemic, where people didn't really know what was going on, but they were getting people together to figure out what was happening in the gay community. Yeah. It felt like this canary in a minefield, or not a minefield, a canary in the coal mine, kind of telling us something was happening. More suicides happened, and it ended up being that where we're at now, during that 3-year period, 86% of our teens that died identified as LGBT. Well, actually, identified as LG or B. We don't really know if anybody identified as queer or transgender. Mm-hmm. It was really on sexual orientation. So it's an issue that was kind of the first issue that we came out publicly about, started doing public school presentations and things like that. And then it was in 2011 that we passed domestic partner benefits for the city of Appleton, which was, you know, yay Appleton.
Yeah.
Same year, we also tried to pass Welcome and Inclusive campaign to try to brand our city as a welcoming and inclusive city. And that went down in flames with one of our council committees. But we have a group that's looking to take that up again. And so maybe that'll happen. But so it's kind of been this progress of, you know, no matter what I get involved in, it seems... in the LGBT community, it seems that there isn't an issue in the LGBT community that isn't going to ignite something in somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Even AIDS, people, you know, you think that's just a basic health issue. Why can't we all come together?
Mm-hmm.
People get nuts over that issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so in our domestic partner benefit fight, they brought up AIDS I don't know how many times. Just the likelihood that people are going to, you know, they're going to get AIDS and you're going to be paying for people with AIDS. And really, the funny thing was, I wanted to say, you know, actually straight quote unquote, married men are at the higher risk for developing HIV, contracting HIV or AIDS because of whether they cheat on their wives or whatever. And lesbians are actually at the lowest end as far as contracting HIV.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we should just not hire straight married men anymore because, you know, we might get AIDS in the building. And we should just hire all lesbians. I really wish I could have said that, but it really wasn't anything that would have flown. And it was a joke. I mean, but, you know, it was that ridiculous.
Right.
If you're going to go down, you're saying not to hire gay people because of that. You're more of a risk to the community than, you know, even these community members, because these community members are at least getting information on it, how to stop the spread, all of those things. And it became frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what was the, when AIDS was starting to become a big issue in the 80s. What was that like around here?
I wasn't here in the 80s. I moved here in 87. So I can't tell you what it was like around here, but I nationally, anybody will tell you that it was just frustrating because we had a president who wouldn't talk about it. He wouldn't even say it. He wouldn't help in any way.
Yeah.
So I don't know how it was around here.
What was the discussion like when you got here? Was there still
There was still, you know, the ARCW was here and they were working very hard to distribute information, condoms, lube, all sorts of, you know, and female dental dams and everything to try to help prevent it. And I think the ARCW really early on was amazing in the work that they did. I don't know when they formed. Was it in the 80s or was it in the 90s? It must have been in the late 80s. But
I think so.
Yeah. So they were the only ones really talking about it.
Yeah.
The gay community. It wasn't like you do nowadays. It wasn't like there were fundraisers and things like that. They had their job cut out for them. So, you know, and nobody was talking about it. So at least in my circles at that time, nobody was really talking about it. So it would be a different story for gay men and the Pivot Club and, you know, those organizations, you know, would probably be talking about it at a different level.
And how does this community respond to the work that you do as far as, like, you know, just using terms such as queer? It's like a lot of people here, do you think that that's even a word in their vocabulary? How do you think this community has changed in terms of knowledge about LGBTQ language? And
I think it's changed a great deal, and part of why it's changed such a great deal is because there's more of us, and more of us are coming out to our moms and our dads and our brothers and sisters and family members and community members, and the more of us that are out and proud doing our work and just being us, the more that attitude gets smashed, that stereotype and homophobia, it gets smashed, because once you know, I mean, that is the one thing, I think that's why people like Ellen can kind of bridge over so much, because she's just this nice person who could be your sister, could be anybody.
Yeah.
We have jerks, we have, you know, I mean, we're just like anybody else, but I think how it's changed in its attitude and how I'm received in the work that I do, it's typically very positive. The naysayers, it's always negative. I mean, that's just, I don't feel like they're ever going to get on board. Their goal is to try to dismantle this work, and it's just not going to happen. But the people that are positive, more and more people are coming out positive in their attitudes as allies because it's in their family. And I can promise you know this, but it is in all of our families. It is not, you know, I think more and more and more people are coming out, and the more that happens, the better it is for all of us, because then it's not so abnormal. Even at City Hall, nobody in the city of Appleton really is really out as a city employee about who they are. We have some, but they might have partners that can't talk about it, or but for me, it's like I'm the out city employee. And so when I came to City Hall, I remember different co-workers would be asking, you know, they'd be like, can I ask you a question? And it would be these awkward questions, because I was realizing, like, am I really the first LGBT person you've ever met? That's hard for me to believe.
Yeah.
You know, and I would say that, and they'd go, well, no, I think so-and-so. And I think so-and-so. I said, you probably know a lot more than you think you do.
Right.
They just might not be out, or you just might not have picked up on it. But, you know, I guess I'm now I feel more well received. People have kind of get to know me a little bit better, and they know that I don't, you know, that I'm not trying to take over the world, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, that the work that I do in diversity isn't just about LGBTQ. I work with the Hmong community, the African American community, you know, all of these, you know, with our policies and all of that. It just happens to be that my identity is this, and we are in a time in our history where my rights still aren't equal, and so of course I have this balance of, do I talk about this or how do I talk about this as an LGBT person when it so personally affects me? The other thing that I forgot to mention that's probably important for you to note in your history is my partner Ann and I are co-defendants in a lawsuit within the state of Wisconsin. We have domestic partner protections in the state. Governor Doyle put it into place. It went into effect August 2010. And it is not substantially similar to marriage. It just gives us the right to hospital visitation, end-of-life decisions, and some other things, but not near the amount of rights that marriage has. When that went into place, Jolene Appling, of course, you know her well, I'm sure, and family, you know, the Family Action Network, filed a lawsuit against Governor Doyle and the state of Wisconsin to revoke this because they said it was substantially similar to marriage. Well, our current governor has refused to hold up the law. So Fair Wisconsin got involved in it and asked five intervening couples to be defendants in the lawsuit. And because there was, when I had cancer, there was one hospital in town who wouldn't let my partner in the room when after we had been told by our doctor that she would be allowed to be in the room for this diagnostic test result thing. And I fought that at the hospital. They finally let her in, but it was a very stressful experience. And so I wrote to Governor Doyle and I wrote to Fair Wisconsin. And that's kind of how I got involved in that. So where we're at with that is that it has passed the Dane County court. The court says, no, it's not substantially similar to marriage. And where we're at now is the Court of Appeals has refused to hear it because it doesn't have a basis. But I'm sure they're going to appeal that. And it could get to the Supreme Court, which, you know, with the state, we just don't know what that would be like. But for now, those protections are really important to me because of my health issues that I've had. I've had two aneurysms, cancer, I have multiple sclerosis, and I had a pulmonary embolism in my lung. I've just had the flukiest luck with my health. And every time anything has gone wrong, my partner is the one who takes care of me, just, you know, is there and is the person in the waiting room for 8.5 hours waiting for me to get out of surgery, you know, and it just is beyond me how they can, the opponents of this can think that just by wanting those basic human rights of having somebody by your side has anything to do with their frivolous lawsuit. So we'll fight the lawsuit. The four other couples will fight in this lawsuit. And it is, you know, it's history making because it's a pretty big deal, and Fair Wisconsin has done some really amazing groundbreaking work, and we're proud to be a part of that.
So as far as the public school system here, how do you think that they handle education as far as like comprehensive sex education, policies that protect LGBTQ youth? What's your assessment on how?
I think they handle it carefully. I think Appleton Area School District has come a long way, and they've done more to include LGBT issues in their bullying and in their staff trainings and their staff education. But it is the one topic that will spook any school district in our area. And our rural schools aren't doing as much as they should be doing. We have a school here who still won't allow the group to call it GSA. They call it something else. So there are just some interesting dynamics. And as far as comprehensive sex education, they do what they're legally able to do and no more. And so there are, you know, there are growth opportunities, I would say. But the staff at our Appleton School District, they have been extremely supportive of this work, and they've really tried to stretch, you know, their thinking and because they want to help kids. So I see that the good thing I see is that they're open-minded.
Have there been any incidents in schools that you can recall that have, you know, in relation to bullying or harassment or discrimination, things like that?
Cody, when he died, his mom talked about, you know, some issues of bullying, and it happened in school and after school. So it's not like the bullying stops when they get out of school. They're out in the community, and it, you know, it happens, and that's Shiocton, you know, Wisconsin. It wasn't, you know, there weren't cases that we saw in other suicides where they were so clear cut, beaten down that's what happened, that they killed them, you know, that they chose suicide. But there's bullying. We hear about it. You know, every single school has bullying. The important thing is now the state of Wisconsin has a law that makes the schools have to have a policy on bullying, and so there are avenues for children to report. And I think that needs to be communicated thoroughly to the children who are doing the bullying and the children who are being bullied, that this isn't tolerated, and here are the steps to get help. And if you don't think that adult has listened to you, here's the next step, and here's the next step. Because that's truly when we're going to see, you know, some of this start to to curb a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So when you work with youth, and you also said your daughter came out, how do you perceive that the experiences of LGBTQs now in comparison to maybe like when you were growing up?
Sure. Well, I think they have a very, even though it's a more accepting community than it was when some of us were growing up,
mm-hmm.
I can't help but to say it is also, it is still very, the gender stereotypes are still
yeah.
so ingrained.
Yeah.
What it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, and especially, I think, the man box issue where, you know, you boys have to be like this
mm-hmm.
rather than allowed to be, you know, sensitive or whatever.
Yeah.
It is still so ingrained in our society. So it still isn't okay to be different. But I think we're getting there. I think that the students that I work with, they call me Mama Q because it's Mama Queer, and they're the activists that I work with. I tend to end up interacting more with the activists, and I have made lots of connections with teens that have been in trouble. You know,
yeah.
teens that have been suicidal. There are teens in outlying communities and in this community where I'll just go and meet with them because, and one of them in surrounding community, I'll just say when
mm-hmm.
he met me, the first thing he said was, "I've never met another gay person before." And I was
mm-hmm.
like, this kid was 17. And I thought, holy cow, that was huge to me. And then he asked me if I knew Ellen.
Oh.
Yeah, and I was like, no, I don't know Ellen. But, you know, because to him,
yeah.
you know, his world is a very small community. That's
yeah.
all he knew. And then, you know, asked if I knew Ellen. It was just like, wow. Yeah, so
mm-hmm.
I think that in rural communities, I get it is still like it was for
mm-hmm.
many of us in younger years. I think
yeah.
the bigger communities like Madison, Milwaukee, and even Appleton to some degree are getting it because there's
mm-hmm.
places like Harmony Cafe
mm-hmm.
and we're talking about it in different venues, but those outlying rural schools all throughout Wisconsin,
yeah.
it is still tough, tough, tough
yeah,
to be
yeah, yeah.
different and to be identified as LGBTQ.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned Ellen. I'm
yeah.
just so how do you think that the media portrayal of LGBTQ identified people
almost non-existent.
Yeah.
Almost non-existent. The fact that I mentioned Ellen is because she's the only female role model that I can even think of that kids have,
mm-hmm.
let alone adults. You know, we have, you know, there are shows that incorporate gay characters and gay storylines, and that's great. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Glee, different shows like that. But it is, we still, you know, the one show that I think in this past year that I found a little glimmer of hope, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was with four roommates, and one of them just happened to be, Happy Endings? No, I don't remember what it was called, but anyway, one of them just happened to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't your stereotypical, what they always portray as Jack McFarlane, you know,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
He was just gay, and it was just, you know, it was just a part of who he was, just like one of the characters happened to be African-American.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was great. I think there just needs to be more shows like that. There's not, the media doesn't represent us well.
Mm-hmm.
My challenge to the media is to get more real people and represent
yeah.
them. And also GLAAD is doing a lot of work with,
yeah.
you know, helping the media understand what they need to do
mm-hmm.
to report on this effectively. Even in our own town, our local Post Crescent, I had an issue with how they were reporting just on the issues of my issue and domestic partner
yeah.
benefits. And I had to get GLAAD involved to help kind of curb the message, because what they were doing is they were giving way too much print time to the opposition and not to us, because the opposition sold newspapers because what they were saying was so crazy
yeah.
that it was like, ooh, this is sensational. And I challenged back, like, hey, quit giving them all the airtime, because you're,
yeah.
you're treating them like, sometimes like they're a legitimate voice.
Yeah.
And they're not. And
yeah.
so that happens all, you know, the crazy ones get, you know, they get the most attention.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you remember what it was like when Ellen came out? And
oh, God, yeah. It was terrifying for any of us who were in the closet, but you know, most of us knew that was such an unbelievable, she had that, not the Ellen show, but she was, I think it was a show just called Ellen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A sitcom.
Yeah, it was a sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most of us knew, I mean, it, you know, so it was
yeah.
kind of a ridiculous show anyway, because here she was supposed to be straight. But I think when, you know, it became national attention, talking, and it just, I felt for her because her life became hell. I mean,
mm-hmm.
complete hell. But, you know, it was a pivotal moment in, you know, in the LGBTQ mm-hmm. history, but I'm not sure how much change it affected that year. You know,
yeah,
I think
yeah.
going forward, she continues to affect change, which is, you know, important. And she's just one of them. I mean, there's just so many media, you know,
yeah.
or not media people, but there's so many leaders that, you know, that are before us that do that without the recognition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about the like adoption process or just same-sex couples and maybe like adopting
mm-hmm.
Your partner's children or things like that? How do you perceive the workings of that in this community?
Backward, because we don't have the ability to go to any judge in this county who will grant an adoption to a same-sex couple.
Mm-hmm.
Because the law, as it stands, is two people, unless they're married, cannot adopt a child unless the child is, you know, the mother and the father have both abandoned this child, and then sometimes you can come in.
Mm-hmm.
But a biological mother or a biological father cannot allow their partner to adopt that child because of the way the laws in this state read. There are some judges that we, you know, that can interpret law differently, and there are certainly adoptions going forward, and I think that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But it needs to happen across the board. It
yeah.
needs to happen. There just needs to be no discrimination. The one thing that I went on a Rosie O'Donnell cruise with my daughter,
mm-hmm.
and the one thing I commented on, there were just families everywhere. It was so awesome because you see these kids who are wanted,
yeah.
who are loved, and not that all kids. I mean. All families aren't like that.
Yeah.
People can have children without any, you don't have to take a class, you don't have to go through any, you know, you don't have to go through expenses.
Yeah.
And we know that society produces parents that aren't great parents.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
At least in the LGBT community, these people have to go through so much to have a child. They're typically, their children are so loved and so wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just seen across the board that if we could just see that, that would be a good thing for
mm-hmm.
these rights. I think people would understand, wow, this child who didn't have a home before now has a home.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there are opportunities, I think, for adoption when, again, like I said, the child has to be given up by all parents involved.
Yeah.
And then the couple can adopt.
Mm-hmm.
But if the couple is biologically one of the people, you can't adopt them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so like my partner, not that would happen, but if my partner, children are grown now, wanted to adopt my children, she could not because
mm-hmm.
we're of the same sex, we're not married, and they have a biological parent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have everybody has two biological parents, but you know what I mean.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. What about the issue of gender identity and the trans community? Do
mm-hmm.
you see a presence of that here?
Yeah, actually, and that's another piece I forgot to mention in the history. In the Fox Valley, I started the first transgender support group,
mm-hmm.
and that was in 2005. And there was one in Green Bay that had gone for a little bit. Positive Voice had done one, and then I said, hey, we need one here in the Fox Valley.
Yeah.
The first group I had probably had 15 people,
mm-hmm.
which was amazing. So I've been involved with the trans community since 2005,
mm-hmm.
and I mean actively involved. As I've been involved in the LGBT community,
right.
but the T is usually kind of
yeah.
dropping off. And so I think there, you know, the Fox Valley has a very active transgender community,
mm.
genderqueer community, and I think gender identity and gender expression are conversations that we need to have at business levels as well,
mm-hmm.
because people need to be able to express their gender however they want to express the gender that they're in, or they need to be able to have their gender identity honored, and we don't
yeah.
see that happening. We still don't have laws in the state
mm-hmm.
that, you know, allow people to transition if they want to transition easily. And when people think of transgender, they think, oh, that's somebody who has transitioned to this gender, and
yeah.
that is certainly part of the umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
But people forget the whole
yeah.
broad spectrum of gender identity and gender expression, and that's typically where the conflict happens in
yeah.
our communities, because somebody's not the stereotypical boy or girl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think things like The Princess Boy, you know, that book,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
are just beautiful things, and we're finally having the discussion that it's okay for a boy to wear
mm-hmm.
a ballerina costume. My friend Helen Boyd, who wrote the books She's Not the Man I Married and My Husband Betty,
yeah.
describes in one of her opening scenes of the book this sexy image of a woman in a man's long white shirt and how incredibly sexy that is.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know the image, you know, she's wearing her husband's shirt, whatever. But then switch the image around and it's a man in a negligee waiting for his wife to come home. And whenever I talk about that in public, I get giggles and, you know, because people are just not comfortable with it.
Yeah.
So the gender gap, we women, not that, you know, sexism hurts us in many ways, but in this way, men don't have it very easy because they still can't walk around in society dressed like women without getting a whole bunch of grief. Whereas we're always wearing, you know, some sort of clothing that used to be considered men's clothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about the youth in the schools also? Do you think that there's anything that protects genderqueer or trans youth?
No. Not that I'm aware of in our area schools.
Yeah.
No. And I think the fluidity of sexual orientation and gender aren't recognized in our health classes either.
Mm-hmm.
It is black and white. It's either straight or gay.
Yeah.
It's either boy or girl. You know, there's just no... They don't allow for anything fluid, and they don't allow for queerness.
Yeah.
Because there's just so much queerness about it that, you know, and that's part of the reclamation or reclaiming of that word, is that some people don't fit in any box, and so where do they fit? They feel comfortable in the Q box.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, and for me, the reason I use Q, and I tell people this when I present, is as somebody who has been partnered with, loved, dated men,
mm-hmm.
women,
mm-hmm.
trans men, and queer people, I can't exactly identify as a lesbian because
mm-hmm.
I'm not. And I can't identify as bisexual because I believe more than just the binary, so of male and female. So for me, queer fits because nothing else really does fit for me. They don't have quad or, you know, I don't know what it would be, but they just don't have it for me. So for me, it is about my sexual attraction and my identity. For some people, queer is about their gender identity.
Right.
That's not about me for my gender identity, but it is about my orientation.
Right. What do you think it takes for this community to have a conversation like that about fluidity?
I think it takes organizations like Harmony Cafe and organizations like that being involved, but I really think it also takes our leaders. You know, I'm sure Shannon talked about the plunge where we got our community
mm-hmm.
leaders together, and I think that was actually Theta Care and Affinity getting together with business leaders and having those conversations. So not only does it take the known activists that always say it, always do it,
mm-hmm.
but it takes the businesses that are leading the way with diversity and inclusion to start having those conversations
mm-hmm.
and to allow the organics of that conversation to allow people to ask questions, because it is so unfamiliar to so many people. But we need to be having more conversations.
Yeah. Do you think that will continue to change, that the older generation might start to latch onto this terminology and to understand it better? Or
I hope so, but the older generation, sometimes where the rub is with the older generation is some of these words were used in such negative ways. So there's a real pushback by, you know, you talk to men in their 50s, gay men in their 50s especially, or lesbians, and the word queer is like, you know, nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah.
And so having that discussion, what I always say is, I understand that and I respect that. For me, this is what I prefer as a label, but I would never call anybody else that, unless they told me that was their identity, because it has been used as such a hateful word. But every single word in our acronym has been used as a hateful word. You know, you're so gay, you're such a lesbian or a dyke or whatever.
Yeah.
So they've all been used in negative ways, and you know, it's just time for us to claim them in the way that they were intended.
Do you think the language in this community and in, you know, Wisconsin might be different from the language people are comfortable using, like on the coasts?
Oh, probably. Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah, on the coast, I think people, they get there a few years before the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
But even me, as an active person in the LGBT community, the language is always changing.
Yeah.
You know, when I sit around a room full of teenagers and they share their identities, you know, pansexual and things
mm-hmm.
like that, wouldn't have been anything 5 years ago that I would have ever imagined, you know, hearing. And just heteroflexible and things like that. So I think, you know, I think we're just always going to be changing and growing and learning, you know, new ways to talk about how we identify.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I guess it's really just important that we allow people to identify however they want to identify. We don't pick labels for people.
Right. Do you think this community what do you think about the sort of like, I mean, Appleton's not a very small town, but
right.
as far as a Midwest kind of small town, that the culture of that, how do you think that is reflected in LGBTQ issues?
Well, I think Appleton has been known as a progressive city actually
mm-hmm.
for a long time. We actually have an exhibit right now at the local history museum from the turn of the century called Progressive Appleton. We had some progressive women and Jewish women and African American women who really did some, you know, pretty out there things for their generation that time. So Appleton has kind of always been known. It's not, I wouldn't say it is the most liberal place, but it
yeah.
has certainly become more progressive and more liberal every, you know, every decade. We just continue
yeah.
to grow. And I think the diversity that's changing our city has helped that. But that small town feel still is here.
Mm-hmm.
There are still people who just want it to be like it was in the
mm-hmm.
50s. But there are more people who are now like, hey, we really dig this cool Appleton, sustainable,
yeah.
all these things, that are having louder voices. And that's, I think that's key, because we can't just stay like we were. We just are always evolving and changing.
Yeah. So do you think that speaks louder, or do you think the silence around this issue speaks louder in this community?
Oh, I think the silence on any issue speaks louder, unfortunately, because the allies and the people in the trenches, you know, it's, I wish I could remember the Martin Luther King quote, but really, you know, it's about the silence of your friends rather than the words and actions of your enemies that
yeah.
that can hurt more, because more people will stay silent on this
mm-hmm.
issue because it's uncomfortable. And
mm-hmm.
until we make sure that it's not uncomfortable anymore, it's just going to continue we're going to continue to see the voices that are so angry and, you know, push back and,
mm-hmm.
You know, the voices that I've talked about earlier. But I just really think that the silence is can be deafening sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I guess this is kind of backtracking a little bit. The spaces that are present now,
mm-hmm.
So like Ravens and Rascals,
mm-hmm.
those are bars. What kind of spaces, I guess, in addition to or besides Harmony, do you see as queer-friendly spaces?
Yeah, the library is a
mm-hmm.
queer-friendly space. I think libraries in general, they've been cutting edge for a long, long time
mm-hmm.
on that. Fox Valley Unitarian Fellowship
mm-hmm.
is a place that is a queer-friendly place. Some of the churches, Memorial Presbyterian, United Church of Christ is
mm-hmm.
another one. You know, those are places that we see that are more progressive
mm-hmm.
and intentionally welcoming
mm-hmm.
churches. As far as businesses, you know, we've got businesses in town like Just Act Natural, which is a sustainable
yeah.
business, where it feels more queer-friendly to
mm-hmm.
me just because, you know, I know the owner and I know, and I think word of mouth gets out like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, before you know it, that's the place people hang out. Some of us hang out at the Fox River House. It's a kind of a working class union bar,
mm-hmm.
that union supporting bar, I should say. It is not a gay bar at all,
mm-hmm.
by any means, but it's kind of a hipster bar, and so sometimes mm-hmm. that's a place where LGBT people also find some, you know, commonality. It's
yeah.
just, you know, we all have certain things in common, and
yeah.
you know, luckily, I'm saying this not representing the city of Appleton. I'm representing myself, of
mm-hmm.
course.
Right.
But luckily, our governor, current Governor Scott Walker, has given us the opportunity to be able to bond together, or, you know, to band together, I should say, over things that we agree about, rather than worrying about the things that we're not alike about, because he's stripped so many of us from
yeah.
some of our, you know, some of our core value, not our core values, but our core, not our core beliefs. He stripped so many of us from just the core basics that we thought made
yeah.
up who we were in Wisconsin, that
yeah.
now I see the LGBT community coming together with the labor movement and just different people that they hadn't been involved with before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you remember any, at these spaces, do you remember any sort of specific incidences, like hate crimes or, you know, people?
Yeah, we've had, you know, unfortunately, Ravens has been, you know, the subject of a few hate crimes in this past year, and they haven't been anything like that you see, you know, in the news, but
mm-hmm.
I met with the owner, Jared, and we talked about the situations happening. You know, it was really these two men on a continual basis came and egged his place.
Mm-hmm.
One time they opened the bar door and they egged inside the bar. And, you know, a drag queen went off after him, didn't catch him. But it was just, it was always, it was either at night or it was either, you know, when they weren't in,
mm-hmm.
in business. But sometimes it started to happen while they were in business. And so in that sense, it created this fear in the gay community because you just never know what people like that
yeah.
are capable of. And then last Christmas in Oshkosh, we had one of the worst hate crimes I think we've had in the area in a while. And that was a gentleman who I know, which I won't release his
mm-hmm.
name, but he was at a bar on Christmas. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and it was that day of Christmas. And these two young guys came in, and you know they wanted a drink or something, and they didn't have any money, so he bought them a drink. And then they all went outside to smoke. They went outside to smoke, and as it allegedly, I'll say, happened, they accused him of hitting on them, and they beat the living daylights out of this guy to the point where he had a fractured skull.
Mm-hmm.
He was unconscious. They broke almost every bone in his face, his jaw,
God.
his cheekbones, his nose. I mean, everything. He was so brutally attacked that if the bartender hadn't come out, and it was at PJ's bar, if the bartender hadn't come out,
mm-hmm.
he would have died. And this gentleman went through just extensive surgery. The pictures I saw, you know, he had staples from here on his forehead all the way back to the back of his, you know, the back of his skull. And all he did was bum a cigarette or allow somebody to bum a cigarette. And it was that it's still, the reason I say allegedly is because it still hasn't gone, you know,
mm-hmm.
trial yet, but because
mm-hmm.
their alleged defense is the gay panic defense, that dude, I thought he was hitting on me, and so I hate gays, and so I freaked out and I like did this thing. And it's the same thing that they tried to use with Matthew Shepard.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
I am convinced that if that bartender hadn't gone outside, he would have been dead. And I'm sure he knows that too.
Yeah.
So that is a kind of hate crime. Oshkosh isn't that far from here, but
yeah.
that is why we need people focused on these issues to make sure that those kind of crimes don't exist.
Mm-hmm. Is the police department here pretty good about responding to that?
Oh, yeah. Appleton Police has had a long history of being very supportive of the LGBTQ community, working with, including our chief of police,
mm-hmm.
And the chiefs that I've talked to in the area as well. We've been pretty fortunate with our police department, which a lot of communities can't say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think going forward is going to be the most difficult challenge for Appleton in terms of LGBTQ issues and civil rights?
Well, I think where we're not at nationally is where we're not at locally.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what's difficult is when we have citizens who aren't treated equally
mm-hmm.
by laws
mm-hmm.
that exist to suppress those individuals' rights.
Mm-hmm.
So marriage equality, I think, even though it is a national issue, it hits home locally. Employers treating employees equally, that'll continue to be a big
mm-hmm.
issue. And gender identity and just safety of
mm-hmm.
these individuals, you know, all of us that identify in this group, you know, I think we're going to have to keep moving forward and not allow the voices of a very few negative people to push us
yeah.
back.
Yeah. What have you seen Appleton come the farthest in?
Well, I think Appleton over the past few years has been surprising to many of us in its progressive movement forward. And one of the places that is in politics.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is something I'm proudest to see us moving forward in is we have a welcoming and inclusive mayor. We have
mm-hmm.
city staff members that are. We have city council members that are. And I think locally that's our shining star.
Mm-hmm.
That's our saving grace is that we have a political action going
yeah.
forward of people doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, do you have any questions you
have? I don't think so. I think you got to all of them.
Lots of notes.
Yeah, lots of notes.
Did everybody else talk this long?
yeah,
about average.
Okay.
Were you involved in Fair Wisconsin beforehand? Before the domestic partnerships?
You know, I was involved with them as far as just
membership
and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What got me involved, you know, initially was not just that incident had happened around the same time at the hospital, and then I went and spoke to the Joint Finance Committee about it for Governor Doyle
mm-hmm.
for the budget. I think it was that April or May or something, like April maybe. And when I spoke, it was on the news, and then my neighborhood got littered with anti-gay propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
Hate, I forgot about that. Hateful, like, you know, here's what gay people really do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this church out of Madison or close to Madison.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I won't give him any airtime, but anyway,
right.
that guy. And it was just suspicious because it happened just in our neighborhood, nobody else around.
Yeah.
And this had happened to a gay teen years before where she was out in the paper about something around LGBT issues, and then her neighborhood got hit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little, it was just a little bit, I guess it was a little bit scary. And so what I did, instead of call any attention to it, is I just emailed friends, neighbors, and started raising money for Fair Wisconsin. And when
right.
I gave it to Fair Wisconsin, I asked if they would take this money in honor of this gentleman who tried to, you know, basically scare me as a scare
yeah.
tactic.
Right.
But if you could send this individual a letter of thank you to let him know that his tactics didn't work in Appleton,
uh-huh.
but what it did was progress... it progressed the cause forward more, because now this money will be used to it'll be dedicated to try to make laws equal for the LGBT community. And I think
mm-hmm.
we raised a couple $1,000. Then Fair Wisconsin used that as part of their fundraising pitch for the next year.
Right.
And they gave Ann and I the Community Activist Award. And it was,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
it was, you know, it was, that was kind of how I first got involved with Fair Wisconsin. And then of course the lawsuit happened and they asked if we'd be defendants
right.
and
mm-hmm.
here we are.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Is there anything else that you would like to talk
about? I keep forgetting things,
and
then I
right.
no, I keep forgetting
you
things, and I go, oh yeah,
so.
And I forgot about that. But no, I think that should do. I'm sure somebody else has covered anything I forgot.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. and
yeah.
you can always do follow up.
Yeah, yeah. So who else have you interviewed?
Yeah, I can't wait.